Today we have with us Dr. David Ray Griffith, who's the author of the book called The New Pearl Harbor. Well, actually, he's a fascinating individual. He was a professor emeritus of philosophy and religion and theology at the Claremont School of Theology. He's written over 25 books. Many of them, of course, is a strongly religious nature, but his last two books seem to have a very, very strong, let's put it political connotation, because he's very, very critical of what happened on 9/11, at least what we are told happened on 9/11, as am I. And his two books, the one is The New Pearl Harbor, the second one, the 9/11 Commission Report, are books which everyone should read, because we have to understand what happened on September 11, 2001. To understand why we went to war in Afghanistan, to understand why we went into Iraq. What did Iraq have to do with 9/11? Absolutely nothing. So why did we go to war with Iraq? Well, I think we can perhaps look to the 9/11 Commission report to find out. This seems to be one of the greatest cover-ups of all time. Dr. Griffin, thank you so very much for being with us.
You're welcome.
This is sort of a far cry from what you taught when you were there at Claremont, isn't it?
Well, yes and no. Yes, in the sense of how people think of theology and philosophy of religion in the traditional sense, but no, in the sense that there has been a strong tradition of early in the 20th century, there was theology for the social gospel, and we had a liberation movement for a long time, which stressed the strong connection between religion and politics. And, of course, that goes back to Jesus and the Hebrew prophets. So it's been a part of the theological task that has been ignored in a lot of our history, but not entirely. Certainly these two books, I don't even connect them with theological interest. They're in the background, of course. One sense, Gandhi defined God as truth. And certainly then to try to find out the truth about anything is to try to find out the what you might call the God's eye view on it. But also one way to understand, define God is all compassionate being who cares about the good of the whole world. And in that case, then those who seek to serve such a deity must be concerned about the good of the whole world, and certainly these political and economic developments of the American Empire are not good for the whole world, and so I felt a need to speak out against them and try to expose the falsehood of the official story about 9/11.
Yeah, and of course, I think it's so important the American people understand the real thing is they want an American empire. They've been working at this for over 100 years. It really started back in 1898 with the Spanish-American War, and it's been going ever since then. But they can't tell the American people what it's about. The average American who's sending their son or daughter over to fight and perhaps die in Iraq would be very upset to find out that they'd lied to us from the very beginning. They lied to us about why we went into Afghanistan. They lied to us why we went into Iraq. But the biggest thing is they lied to us about what happened on 9/11. So let's just take your critique. I haven't really read your book, but I've glanced at it. I've certainly read your other book, The New Pearl Harbor, which I think is excellent. But let's talk about the 9/11 Commission report, and we'll be back in just a moment with Dr. David Ray Griffin, who's done a tremendous job in analyzing this report. Most people haven't read it. I've read an awful lot of it. And, of course, there are more holes in that than there are in Swiss cheese. We'll be back here in just a moment or two here at Genesis. Stand back here at the Genesis Communication Network. Our guest today is Dr. David Ray Griffin, and he's written, I think, a very definitive work on the 9/11 Commission report. You know, here you have this extensive report. It's put out, you know, widely circulated. It's rather large, and how many people are going to really sit down kind of read that with a critical view. Remember, we want to find out why this happened that day, how it could be that 19 hijackers, at least this is what we're told, were able to commandeer four airplanes. And in a nation that spends close to $400 billion a year on defense, they were able to circumvent all of our military planes, able to circumvent the missile defense on the Pentagon. They somehow or other knew exactly which planes to be on because there were so few people on them. It seems that all of the various defense mechanisms we had as far as calling NORAD to intercept those planes, nothing worked that day in favor of defending America, and everything was in the terrorists' favor. The question is, did we know the attack was coming? Is it possible that this is a cover-up, that they do not want the American people to know that the attack was coming, and they did absolutely nothing to stop it? Or is anything we know about the attack really true, other than what we saw on television, which was almost like it was orchestrated, complete with music and tear-stained faces and clouds of dust? It was a great television production, but the question is, what really happened that day? Dr. Griffith, why don't you tell us your impression of the 911 Commission report?
Well, in my first book, The New Pearl Harbor, what I did was to summarize the research that many previous scholars had done, and I simply put it together in a fairly brief and readable way, showing that there's a remarkably strong cumulative argument for official complicity. That is, that the government not only knew in advance, but was actively involved in the planning and executing of 9/11, which would explain all those anomalies you just mentioned. As I picked up the 9/11 Commission report, I read it, of course, with an eye to the question, how did they deal with all the evidence that was summarized in my first book, showing complicity? The answer to that is in the subtitle of my second book, Omissions and Distortions. That is, they omitted almost all of that evidence, that is, didn't even mention it. Didn't even mention the alternative view. They simply presupposed the truth of the official theory, which, as you say, was that 19 Arab Muslims were able all by themselves to bring about all this destruction. Secondly, then, a few places where they simply had to mention the evidence because it was so well known, they distorted the facts in order to dismiss it. If I had been more forthright with the title of the book, I would have called it The 9/11 Commission Report, a 567-page lie.
Well, it really is amazing to me how they could actually get the American people to believe the magic passport. Well, there were two magic passports, one that floated out of the burning inferno of the North Tower and just happened to float down to land on the sidewalk so we'd know who one of the hijackers was and picked up and given to a passerby. But nobody's ever asked how that got out of the pocket of the hijacker. Why a hijacker who's going to commit suicide would even be carrying a passport, but much less how it got out of his pocket and got out of the burning inferno of the plane and got out of the burning inferno of the building and just floated down. I say the chances of that happening accidentally were maybe one in a trillion, either that or it was planted evidence. Was that your conclusion?
Sure. There are so many anomalies with regard to the alleged hijackers. We found Mohammed Atta's bag that he just accidentally forgot to take onto the plane and left it in the car at the airport, and in there was his will, for example. Why would anybody who's getting ready to crash into a building and create a towering inferno carry his will with him? But the first thing that struck me, I expected the 9/11 Commission report to be bad. I expected it to be a whitewash. I didn't expect it to be so brazen, so that it's well known in the 9/11 truth community got at least six of the hijackers, alleged hijackers, who were supposed to die that day, are still alive.
Well, it must be reincarnation, then. I mean, obviously, the people who believe in reincarnation must be true, because six of them are alive and willing over in the Middle, alive and well over in the Middle East.
Well, really rapid reincarnation, too. They didn't even have to go through the birthing process this time. And so some of them were interviewed by BBC, by British newspapers. One walked into the American embassy and said, "What's all this nonsense about my dying in Pennsylvania? I've never been to Pennsylvania, let alone died there." And yet, you know, the 9/11 Commission could have said, well, maybe they had stolen identities. But they didn't deal with it at all. They just gave us all 19 hijackers. They give us the pictures of them, so there's no possibility of mistaken identity. They go into great detail, talk about their personal lives, their girlfriends, and so on in some cases, with nary a word about the fact that six of them are clearly still alive. Likewise, with Mohammed Atta, allegedly the lead hijacker, the commission report says he became a fanatical fundamentalist Muslim. Well, if you're a fanatical fundamentalist Muslim, you don't eat pork, you don't drink alcohol, and you certainly don't go to Las Vegas and have lap dances performed on you. But Mohammed Atta did all these things, plus he lived with a stripper in Florida, and so on. This story, these facts were even carried by the Wall Street Journal, of all publications, and yet the 9/11 Commission, even though we're assured in the preface that they did exacting investigative study, that they're with their big staff, such exhaustive research. Evidently, they never saw this story in the Wall Street Journal or the San Francisco Chronicle or elsewhere. In fact, they knew that the hijackers went to Las Vegas a few times, but they said, "We found no credible explanation for why they might have done this." So, you know, they just lie through their teeth, and that's one of the minor lies in the document.
Well, you know, one of the most interesting things in the staff report, they had the pictures that they showed to the people, you know, of Mohammed Atta drawing money out of an ATM machine in February, and again in March of the year 2001. That's what, it was 6 or 7 or 8 months before the 9/11 attack. Well, if they weren't following him, how did they get those pictures? Because they don't keep those pictures indefinitely. They cycle them about every 6 weeks, unless somebody orders the head of the bank, the manager of the bank, to keep those specific files. So is it possible that they were monitoring all of these people all of this time? Certainly Zacharias Massui, one reason they don't want to put him on trial again is because he said, "I was followed from the moment I came into the United States." Well, if that's really true, it means that everything the government has said is a lie. They were following these people. They knew exactly who they were and where they were.
Well, sure, they couldn't have come up with complete biographies of them the very next day if they hadn't already known. You know, it's like I've been studying the parallels between this now and the Kennedy assassination and cover-up. And like with Lee Harvey Oswald, within an hour, they were able to put out a complete description of this guy. So there was no question that they knew in advance who the alleged assassin was going to be. So it's deja vu all over again, and people who don't know the details of the Kennedy assassination, of course, and the cover-up, it's much easier to be fooled this time again.
Well, I think it's that old adage, if you tell a big lie often enough and blatantly enough, people will believe it. It really doesn't matter, as long as you never hesitate in telling your story over and over again. And the majority of the media agrees with you, and anybody, of course, who questions this immediately is demonized and vilified and belittled and equated with the people who believe in black helicopters.
That's right. Let me give another example, then, of, since we're on Mohammed Atta, another omission. One of the big questions was that the commission dealt with, was there any foreign government funding of Al-Qaeda and of this enterprise in particular? And the document, they say that, no, we found no credible evidence. No, in fact, no evidence whatsoever of any foreign funding. Well, that was an outright lie, because a story in the L.A. Times a few months before had pointed out that they had found a very strong evidence of Saudi funding, and they were debating on what to do with this very explosive information. In fact, that information had already been supplied by the joint commission, the joint inquiry. So Bob Graham, in his book, he was the co-chair of that commission, reports that they had passed on that information, of course, to the 9/11 commission about Saudi funding, which was, he said, absolute proof, not just speculation or not even probable inference, but absolute proof.
So they just
lied about to say that we had no evidence.
But the president said that anybody who was financing the terrorists was our enemy, you know, and that they would be tracked down and we'd got to stop this financing. And yet we find that the Saudis, and I certainly agree with you, were deep involved with financing, and everything has been done to prevent any examination of that. In fact, the president insisted on appointing the head of the commission that was going to investigate the involvement of the administration. How could you have an impartial investigation when the president picked the head of the investigation and laid out the rules for it and then censored the report afterward? Are the American people really getting the truth? Well, we'll be back right after the break here with Dr. David Ray Griffin talking about his book, The 9-1-1 Commission Report. Fascinating reading, a lot of great information in here. It's a lot easier to read than the 9-1-1 Commission Report, and a lot more truth. We'll be right back in just a moment here at Genesis. Back here at the Genesis Communication Network, our guest this afternoon is Dr. David Ray Griffith and Griffin, and we're talking about the 9/11 Commission report. So why don't you proceed, Dr. Griffin, because I think it's so vitally important that people understand that this is just like the report that they had after Pearl Harbor. They had a whole flock of investigations, not to reveal the truth, but to conceal the truth from the American people. And to this very day, much of the information surrounding Pearl Harbor is still classified, not to keep the Japanese from finding the truth, but to keep the American people from finding the truth. The same is true with the Kennedy assassination over 42 years ago. And yet, of course, that's 41 years ago. That information is still secret, not to keep, Lee Harvey Oswald's relatives from knowing what happened, but to keep the American people knowing what happened. And my understanding is that a great deal of the information that came out of the 9-1-1 Commission was taken in secret and then immediately classified so the American people could never know the truth. Is that true?
Well, absolutely. And, there's an old saying that the truth will come out eventually, but then the retort to that is, yes, after it no longer matters. And so now, thanks to Robert Stennett's book, we know about Pearl Harbor. Of course, there was strong evidence before Stennett's book, but his is the capstone argument. Secondly, with the Kennedy assassination, now, just in the last 10 years, the proof has just accumulated. It's so strong that one can now call it proof, not simply evidence of government involvement, both in the assassination and the cover-up. But, people now shrug their shoulders and say, so what? We can't do anything about that. So I focus on 9/11 because the criminals who conspired to bring it about are still in office and still seeking to control the world. So if we can get the truth out, the truth could matter in this case.
And I think this idea that they really want to control the world, listen to what the president is saying. Now, I don't believe President Bush for one minute writes his speeches at all. He is simply the front for some very powerful and wealthy people who do intend to control the world. And when he talks about bringing democracy to the whole world and doing away with all totalitarian societies, and yet we're financing totalitarian societies all throughout the world. All of those Muslim nations in the Middle East, we're backing, and they're all run by former communists. They're all ruthless tyrannies. We're financing the dictatorship, one-man dictatorship in Pakistan. We're financing and backing the dictatorship in Saudi Arabia and many of those countries there. So, but where is the outcry from the American people? It's almost as if, as long as it's said on television, it must be true.
They have, this administration has certainly learned to use all the code words very effectively. So they have played the religion card very effectively, so that even though the Bush administration's policies with regard to the rich and the poor and the rest of the world are the most immoral policies ever, and that's saying something given some of the previous administrations we've had, nevertheless, you've got at least about 50% of the country thinking Bush is just this really fine Christian. And likewise, this word democracy. Well, yes, he does want to bring democracy, but you have to understand how democracy is being defined here. When you read the history of U.S. relations and you learn some of these documents that are now released, you see statements like, yes, we need to bring democracy, i.e. capitalism, to Korea. And so in the secret documents, they'll come right out and say that democracy is simply a code word for capitalism and bringing these countries within the American economic orbit. And likewise, the word freedom. Yes, but as Chomsky says, what freedom means here is the freedom of U.S. corporations to exploit these countries. And so, yes, they do want to bring freedom and democracy, but under very peculiar definitions.
All right, and certainly when we talk about democracy, I think that we have to see what has happened with our democracy. For instance, we brought to Zimbabwe, where, of course, you have a one-party rule, what's happening in South Africa, where we brought democracy. Why don't they establish a republic? America was a republic. We limited the power of government, and people could be free. They want a democracy where everything could be controlled democratically by the political leaders. But unfortunately, in most of those countries, we have the finest political leaders that money could buy. And who's buying them? Why, people of great wealth who buy the support of the duly elected leaders and then use them to enslave the people. We'll be back here in just a moment or two with certainly Dr. David Ray Griffin, and we're going to be talking about his book on the 9-1-1 Commission Report. I think it's so important that we understand that this was not to reveal the truth. This report was designed to conceal the truth from the American people. And if there's nothing to hide, why are they hiding it?
This is the GCN Radio Network.
Stand back here at the Genesis Communication Network. Our guest is Dr. David Ray Griffin, and we're talking about the 9-1-1 Commission Report. What's your take on the flight that hit the Pentagon? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, that's a topic I had dealt with, gave a whole chapter to in the New Pearl Harbor, and went through the various kinds of evidence that show beyond any reasonable doubt that whatever it was that hit the Pentagon, it was not Flight 77 because it was not a Boeing 757.
Well, I think, why doesn't the government release the videos? They have the videos. They pick them up immediately afterwards. Why are they concealing the videos from the American people? If there's nothing to hide, why are they concealing it? And why isn't there an outcry from the American people?
That's right. Well, most people, thanks to the mainline media, don't even realize any of these facts that you and I know, which are that, for one thing, the part of the Pentagon that was hit was the West Wing, which would have been the last place that terrorists, hoping to bring about great destruction, would have hit, because, for one thing, it was being renovated, and so very few people were there. If they'd hit somewhere else, they could have killed thousands. As it was, they killed about 125, and most of those were civilians. Many of those were people who were just there working on the renovation. The top brass, which they would have wanted to hit, I mean genuine terrorists from another country who hated America would have wanted to hit, were all in the East Wing. So the plane hit as far away from the top brass and Rumsfeld as possible.
And then one thing I never could understand is we know that they had already evacuated the White House from certainly a testimony by the Secretary of Transportation. So if they evacuated the White House, why didn't they evacuate the Pentagon as well?
Yeah, well, they claim they had no idea that something was coming to it, and that's, of course, incredible. If one accepts the official story, which flight is that Flight 77 went out and then turned around and started coming back towards Washington, why, if the FAA somehow lost it on their radar, which would be very hard to believe, even then the military's radar, which is many times superior, certainly would have captured it. We're told that it can catch dozens of submarine-launched missiles coming. It should surely catch one giant airliner.
And of course,
go ahead.
I was just going to say that Secretary of Transportation Mineta, described, and I'm sure you know that part, where he's down in the sub-basement. We have his testimony, if any of our listeners would like to have that page. He's down in the sub-basement there, the bunker at the White House, and somebody rushes into the room. Of course, there is Dick Cheney and other people, and somebody rushes into the room and says the plane is 50 miles out. Then a few minutes later, they rush in and say the plane is 30 miles out. And then they rush in and they say the plane is 10 miles out. Do the orders still stand? And Dick Cheney, and the exact wording was, Dick Cheney whipped his neck around and said, of course the orders still stand. Have you heard anything different? Actually, he said he snapped that very abruptly. So obviously they were tracking that plane.
Well,
isn't that amazing?
Of course. And there are so many things that are interesting about Mineta's testimony. He said, and it fits with Richard Clark's timeline also in Against All Enemies, that Mineta got to the White House at 9:15, went immediately down to the underground bunker where Cheney was, and got down there by 9:20, and Cheney obviously was already in charge and had been there for some time. And so this event that you described occurred about 9:25 or so. And so quite a bit before the Pentagon was actually hit. And they're trying to tell us that in the 9/11 Commission report that they really only got 1 minute. They didn't really get any notice, or they got 1 minute's notice. There are two different stories there.
Well,
but in any case, the other thing about Mineta's story is that Cheney was there at 9:20 and had been there for a while, whereas to connect to another flight that is problematic, Flight 93, that went down in Pennsylvania, there's abundant evidence that it had been shot down and had been shot down by a U.S. military plane. The 9/11 Commission report not only simply ignores all of that evidence, which really is abundant, but furthermore claims that Cheney didn't get down to the underground bunker until almost 10 o'clock, in other words, 45 minutes at least later than Mineta said he had to be down there. And, of course, the purpose of that is that everybody knows Cheney is the one who finally gave the shoot-down order. So they're saying, well, he didn't get in there and get organized and give the order until 10 minutes after 10. Well, Flight 93 had already crashed at 10:03 or 10:06, depending on which version you believe, and so he couldn't have possibly been shot down. Well, he was down there long before 10 o'clock, and Richard Clark says he gave the shoot down order about 9:45. So there was plenty of time to. So that's just an example. That's one of the most outrageous lies in there, because they simply blanked out Norman Mineta's testimony to the commission itself in some of that public testimony. And here's a case where the press had to know, if they're paying attention, what Norman Mineta said, because it's right there in the written documents. And yet I've never seen any mainline story that's called the 9/11 Commission report on that outrageous lie.
And, of course, really, there are so many outrageous lies. I mean, how could, a passport survive the flaming wreckage of Flight 93, for instance? Once again, a magic passport somehow got out of the hijacker's pocket. After all, we know that hijackers always carry their passports when they're on suicide missions. And then, of course, get out of the flaming wreckage and just gently land on the ground close to the crash site. Slightly singed, this one was. The other one wasn't singed at all. And this is all in the 911 Commission report. And they don't doesn't even point out the absurdity of this whole story.
No, and say back to the Pentagon with regard to fire damage, we've got two contradictory stories. One is that the fire in the Pentagon was somehow so hot that it burned up the plane, and that's one of the big problems there. The facade that was hit of the West Wing didn't even collapse for a half hour, even though it had been hit by this giant airliner. And the hole in it was about 20 feet in diameter, about big enough for the nose to go in. Well, that would have meant the rest of the plane was outside, and it would have been visible in these pictures taken by the AP and by the Marine colonel and so on. But we've got these photos, and there's no Boeing there. And then, but people say, well, the wings folded up and it went inside, and then why don't we see it inside? Well, because the fire was so hot, it vaporized the plane.
Did it vaporize the engines too?
It vaporized the steel engines and the aluminum, it vaporized everything except, luckily we were able to identify the bodies from, and then there are two different stories, either their fingerprints or their DNA, but in either case, a fire that would destroy tempered steel engines that leaves, this is a magical fire.
Yeah, right, right. Well, of course, I don't know. Do you know Jim Mars by any chance?
I know Jim Mars. His book. I don't know him personally.
Well, he's a personal friend. And, of course, he told me both on the air and off the air that he had actually talked to a woman who was in the Pentagon who came out this hole in the side of the building. There was no fire. There was no wreckage. She was taken to the hospital. Immediately, the men in black arrived and tell her that she saw the wreckage. And she said, I didn't see any wreckage. No, you saw the wreckage. No, I didn't see any wreckage. Take the money and keep your mouth shut. And she told, Jim says that she told him that they were, in essence, threatening her for daring to suggest that, that there was no fire there in the hole that she came out of. There was no wreckage in the hole. But you're not going to hear that in any other place.
People don't realize. They say, well, look, if all this is true, how come a lot of witnesses haven't been coming forward? Well, there is a very good answer to that. We know that from the Kennedy assassination, which, of course, Jim Mars also wrote on, at least 100 people who were closely connected to it and had knowledge that could have been damaging they died mysteriously, let's say. People give threats, and they give both the bribe and the threat, and the threat is not only will you be incarcerated or perhaps killed, but your family. And so what person is going to risk the lives of his own family, loved ones, to try to tell a story that probably the media is going to dismiss anyway? And so until there is a public outcry and a demand for people to come forward, we're not going to get them. But there are lots of people who have been trying to tell the truth, like Sybil Edmonds and several others, some FBI agents who went to David Shippers and said, look, we knew before 9/11 where the attacks were going to be in Lower Manhattan. But they've not been able to tell their story. And so there's this combination of intimidation, bribery, and complicity by the media in creating a hostile environment. So any of us who write about it are ridiculed as conspiracy theorists by people who really know none of the facts. All they know is that conspiracy theories are false.
Well, why don't you tell us a little bit about Sybil Edmonds, because I think her story is fascinating. They've actually put a gag order on it. They've brought in this whole U.S. Secrecy Act or something of the sort so that it becomes a criminal offense for her to talk about certain things, although some of the things she has been able to talk about.
Yes, one of the more, there's so many outrageous things, but certainly this is one of them in the 9/11 Commission report, is the fact that she gave 3.5 hours of testimony behind closed doors, and all of it was deleted. And she had predicted this. I mentioned this in the afterword to the second edition of my first book, The New Pearl Harbor, that she had said, I've given this testimony behind closed doors, but I'm afraid it's all going to stay there. And sure enough, when the commission report came out, that's one of the first things I looked for. I looked for Sybil Edmonds' name, and it was contained in one of those microscopic notes in the back of the book. And she, all it mentioned was that she, along with three other people, had from the FBI, she had been a translator for the FBI, had said that, you know, the FBI really ought to make sure it follows its own procedures, or some innocuous statement like that. Well, then she wrote a public letter to Chairman Thomas Kane of the commission and reminded him of what she had said in her three and a half hours of testimony. And these were eight or nine devastating points, devastating to the truth of the official story. And you can see why the 9/11 Commission, being intent on a cover-up and protecting the FBI's reputation in particular, did not want to include it, but it also does demonstrate how radical the cover-up was and what kind of testimony was, like Norman Mineta, simply deleted from the final report. These were things such as, we have people in the FBI, in the leadership sections of the terrorist part, who are taking documents out of the FBI, secret documents, giving copies of them to the very agents, you know, organizations they're supposed to be investigating. One of these was testimony from an Iranian asset, an FBI informant who was a high intelligence official in Iran, who had warned us about Osama bin Laden and his plans prior to 9/11. And that translator, her colleague Behrouz, was simply told to shut up. He gave testimony for 2.5 hours, and none of his testimony is mentioned. His name is not even mentioned in the report.
Well, I think the most incredible thing is they insist the FBI was just so bumbling, they were so inadequate, they had no idea what was happening. They couldn't put the dots together, they couldn't correlate what was happening in Minnesota with Zacharias Massui, with the Phoenix memo that had been put pointing out the fact that there were an awful lot of Islamic fundamentalists who were taking flying lessons. And yet this bumbling, totally inadequate FBI, within 24 hours, knows who all the hijackers are and their background and their names and has the pictures of them. That is the most amazing recovery in all recorded
history. Right, and as you say, that within 5 minutes of the Pentagon's being hit, the FBI is over there to that service station across the freeway confiscating that video, which would have shown what kind of aircraft it was that hit or didn't hit the Pentagon. So it's very selective incompetence.
Well, I think that they knew exactly what was going on. I talked to the head of the Airman's Flight School in Norman, Oklahoma. She said 10 to 12 days before the 9/11 attack, they were at her training school or flight school, questioning her about Zacharias Massui. They were watching Massui. They were watching him before the 9/11 attack. That one thing would discredit everything in that whole 9/11 commission cover-up. But as long as the other side controls the media, why, they're going to be able to continue to beguile and confuse and deceive the American people. After all, we wouldn't want to send our sons overseas to fight and die in Iraq if we knew that the government was lying to us, would we?
The one of the most discouraging things is, you know, how completely this commission, even though it's so obviously fraudulent, has convinced the American people. So not only is the 9/11 Commission report, you know, the year's number one bestseller, but if you go on Amazon.com and look at the customer reviews, most of them are five-star reviews. Now, I myself wrote a review on there and gave it one star, and there are a few other people who know the actual facts about 9/11 who've given it one star and said they wish they could give it zero. But we're drowned out by all these people who say this is the definitive report, read this, find out what happened, find out why we've got to go after the terrorist, etc.
I wonder how many of those people work for American intelligence agencies.
Well, I'm sure that some of them do, but I think many of them were just citizens who are easily duped because the mainline media doesn't tell them any of these simplest facts. If you've got time before the next
we'll have to talk at great length at some other time. But right now, why don't you tell our listeners how they can get copies of your books and if there's a website to go to?
Okay, yeah, they can get it directly from Interlink Books by simply going to www.interlinkbooks.com. Or if they like to get it at a discount, they can get it from Amazon.com. And in fact, if they'll look for my second book, the 9/11 Commission Report, Omissions and Distortions, they can get that and the earlier book for about half price. It's $22 for the whole thing. Or Borders has been carrying at least the second book and probably the first one, too. So. Sure. And many other local bookstores carry it.
Well, thank you so very much. It's been an exciting hour. I'm looking forward to our other conversations. Bye-bye. Thank you so much.